business.
Hey zombies, and welcome to another episode of the Resurrection of Zombies 7 podcast. I'm your host, Ron Martin. This is episode 54, I believe. And this is our one-night stand podcast that we like to do between franchises. We just finished up the Psycho franchise. We're going to start a new franchise next week. We ran a contest, actually, for this one-night stand for anyone that wanted to post a review of the podcast on our new iTunes feed was eligible to win the prize, which was picking this movie that we were going to watch and review today. Also with me today is the winner of the contest, Hammer. Welcome back to the show, Hammer, that show proper.
Well, I wasn't told I was on here because I won the contest.
No, you were going to be on here anyway, but you picked the movie.
Oh, okay.
This is right here. You gave us 5 stars. Definitely my favorite was your comment by Jeff Hammer. Is there another Jeff Hammer, you think, that left a comment iTunes page?
Maybe so.
What's the odds of that?
I don't know. There's a bunch of Jeff Hammers out there.
Well, there's a bunch of Ron Martins, too, but I can tell you that I'm the guy who wrote Definitely Must Subscribe.
Okay. Okay, well, you threw me off there, but hey, what's up?
Hammer's back on the show proper to do the one-night stands, and I keep using the word proper because I know that it annoys Hammer.
Yeah.
For the record, Hammer, it also annoys Jessica.
No.
When I use the word proper, so. So Hammer picked out the one-night stand movie that we're doing, and Hammer is on some weird kick where he likes these low-budget films all of a sudden. Is it? Did you pick this movie, Hammer, because you like?
I like something different. That's first of all.
Right, but did you also pick this movie like because it was? I know you're big on Kickstarter. You're a big Kickstarter guy. So did you like this movie because it got its start on Kickstarter?
I actually had no idea that it got its start on Kickstarter.
Yeah, the first $25,000, which is roughly 1/3 of this movie's budget, they got off of Kickstarter.
No, I didn't know that.
I think they needed $25,000 and got $30,000 off of Kickstarter to make the movie.
Well, that's awesome. I like Kickstarter.
Why don't you have a project on Kickstarter?
I actually got approval for one, but I didn't go through with it.
What was the project?
I said I don't want to divulge that.
Okay, so there's no horror news this week because...
Absolutely nothing happened.
Not because nothing happened, but because I felt awkward trying to do horror news in front of Hammer. Hammer's the inventor of Hammer Horror News, which has been defunct for a while now, so...
You probably do better than I did anyway.
We can do a quick horror news. What the new Chucky movie is going to come out on DVD. What do you think about that? We actually did that in horror news a couple weeks ago, but...
I don't like when stuff comes out straight to DVD, really. Especially something like that.
You think... What, do you think there's an audience for the 6th Chucky movie?
Well, if there's not, then why are we making them?
Well, there's not a theater audience for it, but...
I think there's some. I mean, I don't know.
They're making them so they can be reviewed on the Resurrection of Zombies 7 podcast.
Hey, do you think that we'll inspire anyone that's at 3 movies currently to make a 4th just so we can do it? Just so you can do it on the podcast?
Yeah.
Obviously.
That's why I think there's probably another Ginger Snaps getting ready to be made. What's another 3-movie
horror
franchises? Can I tell you this, that I was upset when they made Paranormal Activity 4? Because I was like, God damn it, now I'm going to have to watch these movies.
That's funny.
I saw the first one, and I have no desire to see any of the others, but now I'm going to have to watch them at some point, I'm sure. Unless the show gets discontinued before then.
That shouldn't happen.
What do you think? Let me ask you this. What do you think about this new trend, and it's a trend now, of horror franchises on TV?
Do you mean, like, Bates Motel and Cannibal? Is that what you're talking about?
Cannibal?
Hannibal.
Cannibal?
Hannibal.
Bates Motel, Hannibal, The Exorcist, The Scream got green-lighted. There's a Sleepy Hollow one coming out in the fall.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know about the Sleepy Hollow. I guess I can't really say anything about it. I haven't really watched any of them.
I'm ready for a return of Freddy's Nightmares to my TV screen. let me ask you this. If you could pick one horror franchise that hasn't been made into a TV series yet, and you can't use zombies because basically that's The Walking Dead, I blamed The Walking Dead, actually, for this new trend of that and American Horror Story, for this new trend of horror movie franchises on TV.
Well, why do you say that? Just because...
I think because they're horror-based TV shows and they're successful.
Well,
every network executive...
But what's wrong with that? Don't we want that as horror fans? Don't we want horror shows on TV?
No, I'm okay with it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not dogging
it. Well,
you
said blame. You know, blame is just harsh, but okay.
Yeah.
I guess Pumpkinhead.
If they're really?
Yeah, that's... I mean, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I had this idea a long time ago. That's kind of been stolen by a couple of movies since then. But not really stolen, because I don't know who made the movies. But if you sit on an idea long enough, somebody else is going to come up with it. But I had an idea for a long time ago for like a TV series that was a reality series. And I use the air quotes here, because it's actually not a reality series. The kids on the reality series are getting killed off by a killer. But not a movie, like a TV show. And each episode, we'd have viewers vote on who they want to see get killed next.
Oh, yeah.
But,
okay.
But you're not contractually obligated to kill off the person that the viewers want to be killed off. It's just something for the viewers to do. Because it's been my experience, I think that if you let the viewers do something, you're going to get more viewers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but if you don't kill off who they want you to, then what's the point in voting?
If you write a bad guy character that's a douchebag, and everyone would like to see him die, then you know you've done a good job.
So you're talking about something that's actually written, but...
It's scripted, but it's not filmed in advance. It's filmed weekly.
But it's filmed like...
I think it'd be filmed more like, instead of having camera people in your face, I think it'd be more effective if... I don't know how Big Brother's filmed, but there's cameras all around the house or whatever.
Yeah, that's how.
I think that's what I would... Unless they went outside, and then you'd have a camera in their face, but... In the house, that where they get killed, I think that it would be effective if they just had the house cameras.
So are you talking about just ordinary people then? Or
no, they'd be actors. They're okay. Actors, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I had a similar thought that I thought, like, a show like Big Brother, like, just do it exactly the same, but take it to, like, a haunted mansion somewhere or something. Make them have to deal with paranoia, too.
They did that show.
Well, but they've all sucked, I thought.
That's that show that was on Sci-Fi that I hated.
No, but that's different.
What was the name of that stupid show?
But like, make it a normal competition, a reality show competition, but have it be that they have to stay in a haunted house for X amount of weeks or whatever together. I just think it would add to the drama.
I mean, but how would they be eliminated?
Oh, just like they normally are on a show like Big Brother. Like
they have
one of the
challenges and shit like that.
Yeah, and then one of the house guests puts up the other two or whatever, and then
the person who gets the most EVPs gets to stay this week.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, just a normal Big Brother. You haven't watched it, I don't guess. So
I've never seen an episode
a normal
of Big Brother
game, but have it in a haunted mansion, and then you know, but don't force anything. Don't be stupid and like, you know, don't cheat. Just actually let them be paranoid.
No TV executive is gonna let that happen. They'll have to fuck with it. But do you know what horror franchise I like to see on TV?
What's that?
And I don't know. This is kind of a weird choice, because it's been bludgeoned to death in actual movies. With any of these horror movies, TV series, the caveat is that they have to be written well. So the horror franchise that I would like to see in TV format, I think, is Amityville. I wouldn't call it Amityville horror, though. I think I would just call it Amityville, and you could concentrate on more people in the town, but the house is all fucked up. There's a lot there, dude, that you could work with.
Why don't you put it there that way? I don't know, maybe.
I'm surprised that hasn't been done. For the record, now that we're podcasting this, and I'm going to have this on the website, and then it'll be documented as to what day, if next TV season of 2014-15, there's an Amityville TV show, I'm fucking suing.
Even though you have no rights to it whatsoever?
Oh, I have rights right now. I'm claiming it. Dibs.
Okay.
Dibs is good in Hollywood, dude. Okay, so that's your horror news for the week, kind of. I mean, we just talked about some crap. So let me ask you this, Hammer, because you said you wanted to do a movie in the One Night Stand that was on Netflix streaming, because that's kind of your thing.
Well, just because I would have access to it and I wouldn't have to go get it somewhere.
That's easy, too, but also you have the other podcast. that you guys look at a movie that's streamed on Netflix every week, right?
Yeah.
Movie Streamcast.
Movie Streamcast. MovieStreamcast.com. I was starting to say it, and I didn't, so I was like, well, I don't know why I did that, but yeah, Movie Streamcast.
But then I gave you a bunch of horror movies that were on Instant Stream on Netflix, and you said, you know what, fuck all those movies that you just chose right there, and we're going to watch Absentia.
Uh-huh.
Why did you pick this movie?
I've heard good things about it. I'm pretty sure... I don't know this for a fact, but I remember it, whether it's correct or not, that people on Horror Palace talked about it highly. And I know for a fact, Jason Piles, our buddy Jay the Dead, gave it an 8.5. And that's pretty good for him. He doesn't
Is that out of a 20-point scale?
No, that's out of a 10-point scale.
Let me ask you this about Jay. And by the time of this recording, I will already have been on his podcast. Did he have the half system before the resurrection of Zombie 7? Are people stealing our system now?
No.
I mean, I'm okay with people stealing our system.
No, I think he had halves before that. I don't know.
You know what's crazy? Now I've started having the guest hosts on.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, the guest hosts that I've had on are regular listeners of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I have to explain to them, like, the rating system. I'm like, how hard is it, people? It's 0 to 10. You can use halves. 0 means it sucks. 10 means it's fucking awesome.
Well, you're kind of... Do you really think... So, are you not... I mean, are you not worried about them hearing this and being upset with you?
No, I mean, I say it in jest. You know, it's all in good fun, but...
So, what about it do you have to explain to them?
You know, I just...
Is it like what we talked about the other day? Like, whether 5 is average or whether 7.5 is average, like a school grade?
No, I just...
You don't have to explain that to them?
Well, I tell them what I just told you in, like, 3 seconds.
Oh, okay.
Maybe they're nervous. You know, I don't know. Maybe they it's one thing to hear us do something. It's another thing to actually do it.
Yeah.
Because, when I'm listening back to the podcast, like, there's a lot of times where I'll hear me talking... And I'll be like, oh, just say this. All you got to do is say this. Just say this. And I don't say it on the podcast because when you're podcasting, there's a lot, for some reason, when you have to be quick on your feet and think of certain phrases or words or how you want to present something, you can't do it, like, spur of the moment at that moment.
Right.
But then when you're listening to yourself, you know what should be being said and you're not saying it.
Well, I mean, there's lots of times that, you know, you ask me what my rating is, and I haven't really thought about it, and I'm just like,
A lot of the one-night stand movies,
because
I haven't seen them yet, for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, for this movie, for example, in the first, like, 15 minutes, I had a rating in my head, and then as the movie progressed, it went up or down accordingly. For the record, I had a low rating that went up until, like, the last 20 minutes, and then down.
Okay.
That's a little sneak preview of the actual podcast there. So you picked this movie because you'd heard good things from other podcasters, basically.
Right. And it sounded different.
Honestly, I never even heard of it until you told me. I'm like, okay, whatever. If it's a horror movie, let's do it. So Absentia... how do you say that?
Absentia.
Absentia. Came out in 2011... obviously not in theaters, but it did, like I said, it made some money on Kickstarter to get the film made, and then it apparently won lots of awards at festivals. Mike Flanagan, the guy who wrote, produced, and directed our Triple Threat, he's done other movies before that got some, like, critical acclaim, other shorts anyway, at least to the point where, you know, he got Doug Jones to be in this movie. Doug Jones is a, you know, kind of horror icon. Anyway, so the film basically revolves around a set of sisters. One who is fat pregnant. And one who is a former drug addict turned Christian.
Yeah.
The drug addict younger sister, played by Katie Parker. Her name is Callie in the movie. For the first 3/4 of the movie, did you think they were saying Kelly?
No, I thought Callie.
Because for the first 3/4 of my notes, I wrote Kelly.
No, I didn't think that.
So that's just me?
Yeah, but I did think that she was Missy... I don't know how to say her last name, but I did think she was Missy Peregrim.
I don't know who that is.
The female lead in Reaper? Did you watch Reaper?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, the female lead in that.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. I didn't really make that distinction, but I guess I could see that. I felt that, unfortunately for her, I don't know if they had a wardrobe department or not, or they said, hey, just wear something. Because the wardrobe wasn't really necessarily a major part of the film for most of it.
Yeah.
But I felt like in the wardrobe department, her outfits didn't do her any favors.
Okay.
I thought most of the film she looked frumpy because of the outfits that she wore.
Yeah, I could see that.
And that's not... I'm not picking on her or the... I didn't think the outfits were very complimentary of her.
I mean, she didn't look bad. It just she just wasn't... I mean, right? I mean, are you saying...
I don't know. Like, I couldn't tell her body type because of the clothes.
Okay.
Like, I think...
So you were suspecting she could look bad? You just assumed
I was suspecting that... she could look better.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at.
And they didn't make her look better.
Yeah, I mean, she looks nice. And so, yeah, I can see what you're saying. I think she would look nice. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So she's the younger sister. The older sister is played by Courtney Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Trisha, and she is, at this point, like 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
In the movie and in real life. And as I said to you before we started recording today, from the first 5 minutes of the movie, which is basically just these two girls talking, I pretty much was like, okay, this character wasn't originally supposed to be pregnant. The actress they hired got pregnant at some point, and they just wrote in a couple lines about the pregnancy in the script.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
You think that was blatantly obvious to you?
I mean, I didn't really think about it, other than, I mean, I don't know, should I go where I went when we talked earlier, or...
You can go wherever you want, sir.
Okay, well...
You're not going to be on the podcast again for 2 months,
they
so go
end
wherever
up,
you want.
You know, she ends up dating this... We're going to ruin this movie, by the way. If you want to watch it, watch it.
If you want to watch this movie before we spoil it, it is on Netflix Instant Watch.
Right. But she ends up, after she has her husband... Well, we haven't even said that he's missing, have we?
No, do you want to go a little bit further before
we
talk about this?
Yeah, let's go back to that.
But, okay, let's answer the question originally. Did you think that was originally supposed to be part of the script?
I didn't give it any thought, honestly.
If this chick wasn't pregnant when the filming came, would they give her a fake belly? I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not. But I didn't give it any thought, to be honest.
But you could tell from the way her belly was that was a legit pregnancy. That wasn't makeup.
Yeah, I guess now that you can say that, you can probably almost see by her boobs that she was really pregnant.
Well, or she's had really big boobs.
Well, I guess that's true, but I'm just saying that her boobs were like hanging out of everything. And, you know, I guess that kind of happens when you're pregnant, I think. I guess she could have just had really big boobs, but I'm just saying.
There needs to be like a porn website for like slutty...
I'm sure there
slutty
is.
Slutty 8 month pregnant moms.
I'm sure there is. You don't think there is?
I've seen pregnancy porn for sure, but... I'm talking about just like regular moms who dress slutty. No, the beginning of the film, Trisha, the slutty pregnant chick, her husband is missing, has been missing for 7 years, even though she's still putting up posters looking for him, which reminded me of, and I know not probably, this isn't going to mean a lot to a lot of people, but here in Bloomington, we've had a girl missing for 2 years.
Yeah.
And they're still updating like her posters, and she's... Nobody who's been in Bloomington for more than a day doesn't know what this girl looks like.
Yeah. I've thought about her a lot during this movie, actually. The Lauren Spearer case, for people who might have heard of it. I'm sure people have heard about it.
I don't know if it was a national case.
Oh, it was on America's Most Wanted.
Why did you think of that?
Oh, because of the disappearances and just, you know, disappearing between point A and point B or whatever. I mean, there's no bridge here, but I mean, there was a bridge in this one. But
well, there's the big tunnel down in Tunnelton.
Well, there's probably big tunnels all over the place, but...
No, it's called the Big Tunnel.
Well, okay, but, I
it's
mean,
haunted.
We're
I've
not
been
in
there
Tunnelton.
On ghost investigations.
We're not in Tunnelton, though.
We're close. It's only like half an hour drive.
Okay. I don't know. Just, you know, they talk about disappearances and stuff. There's
Well, at this point, whenever I see a missing person's poster, I kind of think of that just because it's all over the place here.
Yeah.
And I actually did base a character on the sequel to my first book that I'm working on right now on that particular item.
I still don't understand why you haven't just self-published that bad boy on Amazon or something.
Okay, because if I self-publish it and I spend the money to self-publish it, who's going to buy it?
No, but I mean, not self.
You're not going to buy a copy of it because
physical self copies, but the downloads to your iPods and such, Kindle app.
Dude, I have to get a job before I can do any of that.
Okay, well, I still think you need to do it. At least somebody will read it that way.
Well, at the beginning of this film, Callie made her way back to her older sister in order to help her move on from her missing husband. He's been missing for 7 years, so now he's a candidate to be declared dead in absentia.
Mm-hmm.
Which means basically he disappeared. We assume that he's dead.
Right.
Which I think this kind of, her being pregnant kind of fucks this up. It does not look well for her. I'm not saying anybody should go 7 years without having sex, but the way at the beginning of this film they want her to be portrayed is, you know, hey, I've been devoted to my husband. I've been looking for him.
Yeah, I tried to say that earlier, and you were like, oh, but modern people. No, I tried to make that point, though.
That's not the point you made. You try to make the point of how could somebody knock a chick up without having dated her? And I'm like, people have recreational sex.
That wasn't, but no, but I'm saying she seemed so devoted to her husband that she didn't want to file for death in absentia. She didn't want to date, but yet she got pregnant 8 months ago.
I mean, there's lots of people out there that want to date that screw. Like I said, our listeners know better, but you know, you've lived this life where you've been married since you were fucking 8 years old. So you never had to worry about that.
I'm
kind
just
of
saying,
thing.
Yeah, it makes her look kind of slutty, and I know you're saying that. I'm just saying that. Yeah, it doesn't portray her the way they wanted her to be portrayed. I didn't put it that way, but yeah.
Well, maybe wearing shirts where your boobs are popping out and your aunt's pregnant makes you look slutty. Anyway, when these two first got together in the very first scene of this movie,
I mean, her sister calls her a whore. So,
well, that's later in the movie.
I thought she called her something like early too, but I don't know.
She probably did say that early, but I think it was in jest.
Yeah, I know. A lot of truth is said in jest. That's straight from Eminem.
That's getting edited out.
Nuh-uh.
No, when these two girls first hooked up at the beginning of this film, I was like, oh dear God, what has Hammer got me into? Because this acting is terrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For the record, it got better as the movie went.
Yeah, I never really thought it was that bad.
The first 10 minutes of this movie, I didn't like it at all. Hmm. Basically, these two girls talking the whole time.
Yeah.
And then occasionally, Callie would run through a tunnel. she runs through a tunnel, and then coming back from the tunnel one day, she runs into like a guy I guess we're supposed to assume is homeless.
Well, I mean, I didn't assume he was homeless, but yeah, I would guess that's what she was supposed to assume.
Yeah, that's what she
assumed.
Well, I mean, watching the movie, obviously you know something's up with the tunnel.
Yeah, so, I mean, he looked like a damn zombie or something, actually.
He did. He was kind of bloody and messed up, and then she decides that means he needs food.
Yeah, she thought
even
he
though
was...
basically all he said is, you can see me? You can see me? And she's like, I'll bring you food.
Then he said something about trade, and she's like, no, I don't have any money. No, I don't have any, you know. And then...
she decides that because she's a Christian now, she has to bring him food, which works for her because it's not her food. It's her sister's food.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you this. As a Christian, we see this. We see Callie pray several times. She's like the worst Christian ever.
Why do you say that?
This was her prayer. Literally. Help me put up... Dear God, help me put up with all the bullshit. In Jesus' name, amen.
Is that what she said?
That is exactly what she said.
I guess I didn't hear that.
And I'm like, that's a terrible prayer. If I was Jesus, I would bitch smack her.
Yeah, but she decides he needs food. I think he clearly needed a hospital. I think I would have been trying to get him to the hospital.
For real. And like, okay, so the tunnel is like across the street from where Trisha lives, right?
Uh-huh.
You can see it from her front door.
Right.
She decides this guy needs food. She runs to Trisha's house, then proceeds to do what the fuck ever for like 6 or 7 hours, and then remembers like before she goes to bed, oh yeah, I gotta feed that guy.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. Ran back to the house and fucking dial 911. But the guy's not there, so she tries to leave some food. She does leave some food. And that gets her a bunch of metal crap left on the doorstep.
See, I wondered if it was keys, and I wonder if that had something to do with the break-ins.
I think it was just random stuff. I think it had stuff to do with break-ins, for sure. Because there's been a lot of break-ins in the neighborhood. It's a bad neighborhood, as this detective is so apt to tell us all the time.
I thought somewhere in there I saw, like, keys and stuff, and I just thought, well, maybe if somebody's feeding this guy and the thing trades with them and gives them keys, maybe people are going around and breaking into people's houses with their keys.
I don't know. Breaking entering, then?
Well, it wouldn't be breaking. It would just be entering. But later on in the movie, they say that somebody got in their house without it being breaking and entering. I don't know how they explained it. I don't know if they said burglaries or if they said breaking.
Okay, just to fast forward for a while, for a minute, even though the fast forward in the movie, the thing that's breaking and entering doesn't need to use the doors. It comes through the walls.
Right, so that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about burglaries.
I think it was just a bunch of like jewelry and metal and shit.
It might have been. I don't know.
That the thing collected while breaking and entering. She gets this all this metal.
Oh, you know what it was? It was dog tags and stuff off the dogs the dude was bringing.
Oh yeah,
that's what it was. Yeah. That's what it reminded me of. It was a little dog tag.
You're probably right, actually. Yeah. Now that you say that, you're probably right.
Yeah.
I was actually hoping, Hammer, that when we had this discussion today, you could explain a lot more of the movie to me, and I just missed it, because sometimes I miss some things that you pick up, you know, and vice versa, of course. I was hoping, I was like,
Not usually.
I was like, maybe Hammer understood a little bit more of this than I did, and then you're just as lost as I am.
Yeah.
So that kind of sucks.
Well, at least we put that together.
Eventually, after talking about it on the podcast. Yeah. So she gets all the dog tags or whatever, mm-hmm. and she's like, oh, what the fuck am I going to do with this? Right. She takes it back to the tunnel, mm-hmm. leaves it there, and where she runs into like a shady looking dude with a trash bag.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't leave shit here, even though he does it.
Yeah.
Which is odd, because later on we learn what's in the trash bags.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts the trash bag down, and you would think that from what's in the trash bags, the trash bag would move, but it doesn't.
Was it alive?
Small babies in the trash bags.
That's not true. Was it alive?
The one at the end was alive.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, that is weird.
We spend a lot of time in boring-ass scenes, just the two sisters talking about things that don't matter at the end of the movie. Are like bullshit stuff, like seeing the lawyer to get the death certificate of the absentia.
but see, Ron, this movie's too deep for us, because there's all this shit on the internet about how, oh, this isn't a horror movie; it's a movie about about neighborhood. I don't know, like. Oh, you know, fucking, I don't even know what to call it. Like, class society and stuff, like lower class, like neighborhoods and people being left behind and all this shit. And I'm like, you know what? That's great. But I want to watch a fucking movie that actually has a point within the movie.
Yeah, I picked up on some of that stuff later in the movie. I didn't think I necessarily picked up on that, though, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's that stuff, and that's fine, but that doesn't make a movie. The movie still has to be good on its own, for me.
Oh, no, I agree with you 100%. At this point, we've met a detective that frequents Trisha's house, mostly because he's banging her.
Yeah.
He's the father of the child, which, like I said before, I don't originally think there was supposed to be a baby, so I think that he had romantic interest in her. Mm-hmm. In the original script?
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
For sure. But the moment that you saw the detective, did you know he was banging Trisha? I think it's pretty obvious.
I don't think I really did. Not necessarily.
I don't think they tried to hide it that much, so it wasn't a big deal, but...
I think we at least knew that... I think I knew that he was interested in her.
What I thought could have been interesting, because the way that the dialogue was set up and the way they blocked certain scenes was basically they were telling us, this is the father of the child, this is her love interest, without actually saying it. So I thought it would have been much more interesting if at the end or near the end of the movie we find out that none of that's true, we just assumed that in our head.
That he wasn't really the father?
Yeah, and he wasn't romantically interested in her.
Like, I think they could have
done... At the halfway point of the movie, you find out that they blatantly say it, but for the first half of the movie,
yeah,
they just kind of hint around at
it. I see what you're saying. I think they could have done that with the baby, but I don't think... I think it was too far to realize that he wasn't interested in her. To really believe he wasn't interested in her.
Well, this detective has some of the worst luck in the world because he's been chasing this chick for a while. she finally declares her husband dead in absentia. And she finally agrees to go on a date with the detective.
Well, wait a second, though. Because before that, she's seeing her husband. She's feeling bad about having him declared dead. And she sees her husband in all these lucid dreams.
And she, sees him, his vision, randomly. And
we're kind of waiting on him to actually be there one time, right? I mean, don't you think were you waiting on that, or were you not?
I didn't know if he was going to be there or not. I didn't know if he was going to be, a ghost to her the whole time, or if he was actually going to show up. I mean, I was probably 75% sure that he was actually going to show up.
Yeah, okay.
But it wouldn't have surprised me a lot if he didn't just show up and he was just, a vision or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that for a second. I'm glad you mentioned that. I think that all these, ghostly visions she was having of him or whatever, I think they were meant to be really creepy, but they didn't work for me. Did they work for you?
No, not really. I'm with you. I don't... It seems like the typical thing nowadays to me.
I don't know if I'm desensitized to it, or...
That looks weird and opens his mouth and kind of has some weird glowing deal. And it just looked like... Just like the little creeper girl to me. I mean, it just looked like more of the same to me.
I think a creeper girl probably would be creepier. I didn't work. I don't think that really worked. But as I was saying, Trisha finally agrees to go out on a date with the detective.
Mm-hmm.
And he's all giddy about it. He probably ejaculated a couple times. So when they go out on their first date ever, they get roughly 15 feet from the door. And her ex-husband, her husband who's dead in absentia, shows up.
I like that scene, though, because it works well, because she had learned to ignore the visions.
Uh-huh.
So when she first sees him, and we first see him on the screen, we're like, oh, okay, she's just having
another vision. Sure.
But then we kind of change perspectives, and it's the cop that's looking at him, and we're like, oh.
Yeah, when the cop points, you know it's legit.
Right.
No, you're right. That
she didn't know. She didn't know it was legit, you know. And then, but she sees it. He sees it, and she's like, "Oh shit!"
And neither the audience.
Right.
So that does really work well. You're right. Yeah. Oh, okay. So this guy comes back after 7 years. He's all super skinny, and he's all fucking wrecked in the head and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
These two cops show up to question him for sure, because hey, where have you been the last 7 years? But they're total dicks. Trish is kind of a bitch to him too.
Well,
and I don't think Callie's terribly likable. I don't know who I'm supposed to root for here, because I don't really like any of them.
Oh, I liked Callie. I thought she treated him fine.
No, I think she's written to be likable, but I just didn't.
You just got mad because she's decent looking and she wasn't showing off.
No, she...
You were just she needed to be sluttier.
No, that has
nothing
to do with it.
That's exactly what
I got enough of the slutty from the pregnant one. So, that wasn't at all. I just... thought she's wishy-washy. Hey, we're supposed to like this character who's a Christian or whatever, and she's like, God protect me from the bullshit. And we should mention that... she... why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because we're sitting here on the floor trying to record this. We're both fucking moving all over the place. We can't get comfortable, and our legs are falling asleep.
This is what we usually do at the table.
Bad circulation. This doesn't hurt my back as much, though. But
we should mention that at this point, Callie has returned to her drug-like ways. Probably not as bad as she used to do it. She's, what do you think she's doing? Pills or smoking weed?
The sister says acid, doesn't she?
I thought the detective said pills at one point.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. It's in some little box, and at first I thought she was just playing around in Pandora's box or something. What's going on? I know what was going on.
Oh, you're getting deep, Hammer. Yeah. Look at you. You're like an online reviewer. No, but the cops, they come and question this guy. He's been gone for 7 years. He's been back for one day. And they get real shitty with him.
Yeah, oh, you get off on eating animals, huh?
We're going to kick your ass. I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, and another...
No, but okay, but... the thing with Trisha not being happy to see him or whatever, I mean, whatever you said, you know, she's been through a lot, and she was finally over it, and now here he is. So that makes sense to me.
I think the way that she treated him, though, made her completely unlikable in the movie.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I never liked her. I agree. I don't like anybody in this movie that much other than Callie. I kind of liked her. And then the police, the one police detective, makes sense because he was getting ready to get his relationship he's been trying to get. And
right, here's what didn't make sense, though. Why is he on this case? Is that not a conflict of interest?
It is, but at the same time, if nobody is there to pull him off, he would probably want to be on it.
This is Los Angeles, dude. Somebody should be there to pull him off.
Eh, I guess.
And here's another thing that bothered me about the police procedural in this movie. If somebody goes missing for like 5 minutes, they're like, you need to fill out a missing persons report. Don't you have to wait 24 hours before you can fill out a missing persons report?
You might be able to fill it out, but then I don't think they can act on it until 24 hours.
Like the way this movie went, if I got up and went to the bathroom right now, those cops are coming in and tell you to file a missing persons report. Hammer, you need to file a missing persons report. You haven't seen your friend in 15 seconds.
Well, I'd do it.
Right, well, I appreciate that. So the cops are dicks, and Trisha's kind of a bitch. Then we get this whole subplot with Daniel. Daniel's the missing husband. With Daniel's parents, that has nothing to do with the rest of the film.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah, they probably should have thrown that out. I mean, it was kind of like, man, I at least did think, man, that would suck. You just told him their son came home, and now he's gone again. We didn't even mention that, though. He's gone again now.
Well, I haven't got to that point. Do you think maybe that was a
smike? If you're talking about them coming... Well, you didn't talk about them coming, though. Okay, my mistake.
They're in a couple of scenes, or they're mentioned in a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe that was just, like, Mike Flanagan's mom and dad? They said, put us in the movie.
I don't know. Maybe.
Or maybe... Okay, maybe the highest... donating Kickstarter people got to be in the movie and they wrote them a role or something.
It could be. That happens.
Do you think that if you pledge like $10,000 for this movie to get started that you got to knock up Courtney Bell?
Maybe.
I'm just saying. That's a lot of money.
Maybe. Yeah, it was probably like you get to go on a date with our lead actress if you donate $1,000. And then she got pregnant, and they were like, you fucking idiot.
I'm not that familiar with Kickstarter. You're way more familiar with Kickstarter than I am. Do they take down the pages once the thing has passed?
No, I don't think they do.
Because I wanted to kind of see what the levels of prizes were for this movie.
You could probably look it up, yeah.
I might do that and post it on the Facebook page or something. We should say this. While Trisha's husband is like crying in the bedroom or whatever, Callie comes in, they have some little conversation, Trisha is out in the car making out with the detective, or maybe not making out with the detective, we never really know.
No, not really.
This is going to sound really stupid, one thing I like about this movie but don't like about this movie, I like it when stuff happens and the characters are telling what happens and then we get the scene as they're telling it. But what I don't like about... I mean, I like that. I like that from a filmmaker's point of view. What I don't like about that is we never actually know what actually happens. Because we're getting, like, four different versions of everything. Like, was Trisha making out with Detective Mallory? Or was Callie just assuming that she was?
I don't know.
And we just got that scene because Callie was telling the story.
I don't know. It's weird because I don't mind thinking... I like to think when I'm watching a movie, but I guess I want to be able to get the answer at some point, and I don't really like it when I don't.
I'm kind of with you on that.
I mean, we'll talk about that again later, probably. But
at this point in the film, while Trish is outside doing something with the detective in his car, we find out that the thing that that has Daniel all freaked out is insect-like, he says, and then all of a sudden, and it's in the walls. So it attacks him and Callie, basically.
Yeah.
More so him than Callie's just kind of there.
Yeah, actually, though, this film does something that I like. When she's in the bathroom, do you remember that scene? Uh-huh. She's in the bathroom brushing her teeth, and she, like...
She brushes her teeth for way too long. And she spits on a cockroach.
No, she probably brushes them as long as you're supposed to, but...
Like 5 minutes, dude?
I don't know. Whatever, but... she sees the shower curtain kind of moving behind her, and the anticipation of her opening that shower curtain was killing me.
Really?
That might be a personal thing. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, the build up to, like, is something going to be there or not was awesome to me with that scene. And then she opens it and nothing's there. But I was ready to be scared and then it didn't happen. But that's fine because the tension was there. It does that a few times in this movie. I like that about it.
I mean, there are some good things like that. Like, I also enjoyed when they just showed, like, the tunnel at night and nobody was even in there and you just saw a shadow move.
Yeah, there was all kinds of things. Like, I was like, is something in that or is it not? And, like, I could never, like, really figure out whether there was really something there or not.
That's kind of what frustrates me about this movie, because there are some really, there's, like, some really good filmmaking techniques on display here. And I think that Mike Flanagan can make a good movie. And I think that he can write a good movie. I don't feel like this movie is complete.
Yeah, I'm with you. I kind of think the idea is good. The, you know, the concept, the premise, all, everything's good, but it's not particularly well executed, in my opinion. Some of it's not.
Okay, so I pulled up the Absentia Kickstarter page. Okay. It is still here. For they didn't get any $10,000 pledges, which I don't think I'd go for that one either. they didn't get any $7,500 pledges, but if you pledged $7,500, you would have got your image on a poster. I'm sorry, no, that was for $5,000. For $7,500, you got a walk-on role in the film.
But they didn't get any?
They didn't get any. They didn't get any $5,000 pledges either. Mm. They got some $1,500 pledges, which was whatever all the benefits were above, which I didn't read. Associate producer credit. And a cast and crew signed poster. Apparently, you don't get to have sex with Courtney Bell.
You know what I do sometimes, just in case I ever do put something on there?
Yeah.
Like, I figure it's better to be active on Kickstarter to get, like, other people to, you know, other people to give you money for your project.
Sure.
So, like, I'll wait until, like, the last day, and, like, something's, like, a mile away from its goal, and then I'll, like, say, yeah, I'll give you $150, because they don't get it unless they make their goal.
That's
so
terrible.
That way it looks like, hey man, it looks terrible. Like I was trying to give them their... So there's all these projects out there that really suck that I try to give money to, and then I figure, you know, that...
Well, you gave money to the one, and that got finished.
Yeah, sometimes sometimes I give to one I actually want to be seen. I actually want to see. And I don't usually give it to ones I don't want to see, but I'll give it to some that just because, you know, I moderately want to see it, and I would be okay if I had to pay the amount, but I'll probably, you know, usually pay a little more than I would normally because I'm probably not going to have to pay it. And then maybe
like
when I...
$5,000 or something.
When I put up something, then do what?
Then why don't you just put like $5,000 or something?
Well, because I don't have that if for some crazy reason it made its goal all of a sudden. Because, I mean, that's the danger. You never know. They might have somebody that's sitting around and that'll drop $10,000 to make it make its goal if they don't make it. And then I'm screwed.
Okay, let me ask you this. Would you pledge $45 to have Absentia made if this was the prize? I mean, obviously it's not anymore because the movie's already made. But the next 10 people who pledge $45 or more will be mailed a batch of Katie Parker, who played Callie, of Katie Parker's homemade family-style heroin cookies, complete with a handwritten thank you card from Katie. Mmm, they're addicting.
I'm surprised they even put that on there. Like, that sounds like, I'm sure it's not, but I still think, like, that could get you investigated. But I guess that's a good thing if you're a film.
So $45, you could have done that. You could have done that.
I don't know. Maybe, just in case Katie Parker ever became a big deal. Maybe. If I wanted to see the movie.
Well, you eat the cookies. You're not going to keep them.
Well, no, but...
For $60...
I'm saying the thank you note.
You would receive...
But also, you get everything above that, too. So if the DVD is above that, like if the DVD is for $20, you would get that, too. You get all the prizes that are lower amounts.
It doesn't say that.
Well, that's how it's supposed to work.
That was said limited time, so I don't know.
It should, I still think, but I don't know.
For $60, this is a la carte prize, which I think means you just get this. The next 10 people who pledge $60 will receive an 8x10 autographed photo of Doug Jones in the character you specify, autographed personally to you. You know what character I wouldn't specify?
What?
Billy Butcherson from Hocus Pocus.
Oh, you're such a loser.
Now, so at this point, Daniel has disappeared again, but he doesn't so much disappear as he gets taken. And we know that the creature that is after him is kind of insect-like. So we get, and I kind of dig this, we get glimpses of, like, this monster thing. You see an arm here, you see kind of a fuzzy face here, or you see the creature from a long distance away. It's kind of the same thing that they did in Cloverfield. It's kind of similar to what they did in Signs. But at the same time, like, I think you got to have a payoff for that.
You think?
And the payoff doesn't necessarily need to be, I need to see the monster in full. But there needs to be something. Did that work for you at all?
I mean, I thought it was okay. I didn't really have much of an issue.
I think it adds the creepiness, but I also, when I see that, I also get the feeling that, okay, so we don't really know what this monster looks like as filmmakers. So this is all we're giving you.
I mean, it didn't really bother me that much, but...
Daniel's missing again, and they find, the cops find a... Or Callie tells her story, but the cops immediately assume that her story isn't legit because she's high. When they find a body, they come to her for body identification.
Yeah.
Even though she's stoned all the time.
Well, I guess at that point they realized, well, maybe she wasn't lying.
So they see a body, and I think what they're... And this, I think this is a pretty decent scene. Well, I think what they're trying to get you to believe, obviously, is that the body's of Daniel.
Right. And, I mean, I think that's why... I mean, that's probably the reason they were going to her, is just to convince you of that, I guess. Because they wouldn't want her, you know, they wouldn't want the wife to see him first, but she could easily identify him as well.
I thought because they went to Callie meant that it definitely wasn't going to be Daniel.
Really?
Because Callie's the one who saw Walter, the guy from that she saw in the tunnel. She's the one that saw him.
I mean, that's true, too. I mean, it ran through my mind that it could be either one, but I would have also thought they would have went to Callie instead of... I mean, on site like that.
Well, the detective could have identified that body.
Either one of them would have known that. But either one of them should have known this other missing guy, too, really.
Walter?
Yeah.
So it's identified as Walter... And ironically enough, his son's coming to make a donation, or a trade, with the whatever creature lives in the tunnel walls. And we find out the trade involves live puppies. And the cops basically tried to beat the shit out of this guy who is trying to trade small animals in exchange for his father's life.
Yes.
Because obviously, they're not going to believe there's a insect creature living in the wall that's keeping his dad alive if he feeds him small puppies.
Yeah, probably not.
And this is kind of where, because at this point, I started off and I'm like, this is probably not going to be a very good movie. But then it grew and grew and grew. I'm like, well, you know what? This is pretty decent. I'm kind of digging this.
Right.
And this is kind of where things fell apart.
Okay.
I'm like, if the kid is still giving him dogs, why did he kill the dad?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's a good point. I hadn't even thought about it. I guess, unless you think that somehow Callie messed this whole thing up, or the guy getting away messed it up or something. I don't know. Or, what's his name?
Daniel?
Daniel getting away. But I don't know.
Well, how did he even get away?
I don't know. I assumed that had something to do with the trade.
I did, too. I assumed that she gave the food, so they let Daniel go. But what's she have to do with Walter?
I don't know. Good point. But is the food for the thing, or is are the dogs for the thing, or does the thing make the people eat it? Because Daniel had...
I'm guessing the thing makes the people eat it, because okay. Daniel had animal bones in his... body or whatever. Maybe he, you know, maybe the insect guy eats some too.
Maybe.
He's like, you know, I like cats and dogs. Oh, yeah, the cops are total dicks to this guy whose dad just died.
Mm-hmm.
And they assume that he's like a serial killer because, you know, he's got a dog in a trash bag.
What's weird about that? You do that all the time.
This is where I think that maybe, because the cops haven't really been helpful this whole movie, and so they've kind of been dicks the whole time.
Yeah.
So this is why I kind of thought maybe this was a social commentary on police in regards to their relationship with the actual general public.
Well, aren't they just typical horror movie police? I mean...
No, I don't think they're inept. I just think they're dickheads.
Oh, okay. Well, at least they're not inept. That would be the worst thing to say about cops, is that they're inept.
Well, they play a role in this story. Most cops in horror movies don't play a role.
Whoa.
They're just they're just there because it's stupid to have people die and not have cops there.
Yeah. Okay.
So that storyline basically goes nowhere.
It comes back around a little bit.
Later. A little bit. So Callie and Trish get in a big fight. Callie gets stoned again, and Trish calls her drug head, and Callie calls her a whore, but meaning it this time.
Yeah, see?
But Callie puts two and two together and figures out that this tunnel, there's a bunch of people in the neighborhood that have disappeared over the course of a long time, and this tunnel's been at the pretty much the crux of every disappearance. So she kind of puts two and two together, but of course no one's going to believe her because it's kind of a crazy story.
Yep.
So my question to you, Hammer, is what would it take? What would it take for you to believe this story? Is there anything, say this is it really happened in real life, and I was trying to convince you that this is what was going on. And when I'm a little crazy.
I don't know.
I believe in more shit than you do. What would I have to do to convince you that this was legit?
I mean, I'd probably just have to see it, I guess. But at the same time, I mean, there's a lot of people that disappear, and it seems hard to believe that they're all just getting murdered or just running off or something. So I don't know. I mean,
well, her sister doesn't believe her.
Yeah.
The detective doesn't believe her.
Right.
You said you'd have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, Trisha eventually sees it. Mm-hmm. Because the two girls are in the apartment, and why haven't they fucking left this apartment by now? Jesus Christ. You know the fucking thing is in the walls. It comes for Trisha.
Why does it come for her instead of Callie? That's another thing. It doesn't really.
Well, here's the thing I don't get, too. Like, the twice in this movie, they show the creature in the apartment grabbing somebody. Once it was Daniel, once it was Trisha. Mm-hmm. Then they show Callie and the victim at the entrance to the tunnel, because they have a concrete post so cars can't drive through the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And both times, the victim is hanging on to the concrete post, trying not to get pulled in, mm-hmm. but gets pulled in eventually.
Right.
So are these people being dragged across the street by a insect-like creature, and no one's seeing this?
I guess.
Because you think if he was transferring through walls, they wouldn't be at the entrance to the tunnel. I know that people today, and this is probably the best example of this right now is those girls in like Cleveland that were held captive for like 10 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. People see weird shit and they're like, they don't get involved because it's not their business or whatever, and they don't want to deal with it and they don't want to be involved. But dude, if I'm outside and like I see like a giant insect person dragging a pregnant woman down the street, I'm gonna call somebody.
Well, I mean, it doesn't do it a lot. It probably usually grabs them in there or something, I guess. But Callie,
well, it's done it twice
off,
in like a matter of 3 days.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, man. I guess that's true. I don't know.
So Trisha is gone, and Detective Mallory is very the father of the baby. He's very upset.
Yeah.
Because he's like, damn it, I never got the one date.
You know, actually, what you said about the thing in Ohio, though, that's interesting because actually, people did report weird stuff going on, and it was the cops that were just like, eh, whatever. They went and looked around and didn't see anything outside and didn't even go in. So,
because they're horror movie cops in Cleveland.
Yeah,
apparently.
I guess so.
So this is near the end of the movie, and Callie decides, well, she's going to leave all this evidence for Detective Mallory, which in the end doesn't matter because he doesn't believe it anyway.
He accepts it as a possibility, I think.
And Callie decides that her best option is to go into the tunnel and offer the praying mantis-like thing a trade. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing she believes that she's going to get her sister back in the trade.
I guess.
Well, here's the thing. When you deal with monsters, they don't trade fair.
Well, I assume she's trying to offer herself up for her. Was she not?
I have no idea what she's trying to offer up, because she's never actually said. I mean, you can assume that, sure. But the monsters are like, fuck you guys. I'm stronger than you, mm-hmm. and I'm creepier. I'm not going to take a trade. All of a sudden, even though trade was the whole thing for the movie, this guy decides, well, I'm not trading. I'm just going to take your ass as well.
Well, but first he throws something out there.
You know, he does throw something out there. It's not quite clear what that is, because they never really show it, like in a close-up.
Yeah. But it's red, and it looks messy.
It looked like intestines to me. I guess if you really wanted to say, it could have been the child.
Yeah.
And maybe that was what he traded, which Sucks, because the kid's going to die like in a matter of like 10 minutes from exposure.
Well, I would have assumed it was just dead anyway, but once he ripped it out of her. But
yeah, it probably was already dead if that was it. So still, not a very good trade.
No.
So now Callie's gone too, except for her shoe. And then we get the two detectives trying to rationalize what's going on. Mm-hmm. So they come up with like 6 or 7 different scenarios of what actually could happen, which at this point seems a little ridiculous because we know what happened. Why show us possibilities of what didn't happen?
Well, I mean, sometimes, I mean, well, especially if Callie was on drugs, I mean, I don't really have an issue with it being the possibility of something else happening, really, but
I think that we're pretty much told what happened. If she is on drugs and something else, it was a different situation. Like, okay, one of the possibilities they present is that the kid who was trading the dogs for his dad's life mm-hmm. is actually a serial killer.
Right.
And that's why people go missing and dogs and cats go missing in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They present that as a possibility. If that was the case, I think that would have been a really cool ending to the story.
Right.
And maybe Callie and Daniel. Oh, it doesn't make any sense, though. If they had paced the story differently, and it all could have made sense with this guy actually being the serial killer instead of a monster in the wall, mm-hmm. I think that would have been a really cool story. Now, to do that, Daniel couldn't have come back.
He could have done something, probably, to make that happen, but
I don't think any of those other possible endings are feasible. Because we know what happened. There was a creature that took Callie, and if we're seeing it through Callie's eyes, and maybe she's just stoned all the time,
yeah,
I don't think that's a very good ending. Without actually telling us that was something different. You know what I'm saying?
I think it would have been okay, but I think for me, what screws up the ambiguity of the police investigators talking is that at the end, we see her in the tunnel, and we see the cop look at her, and then he goes up there and she's gone, or she's gone and the next time he looks or something.
Yeah, because the cop
starts
seeing.
And then you kind of see, like, this insectoid thing with some weird, like, glossy look and her, you know, behind her or something. I don't know. Right? Am I crazy or did I see
that? Think that from watching this movie, I don't think that any of the other things they talked about are possibilities anymore. I think that it was an insect thing in the wall, which is a fine story. It works. The way it's presented, there's, like, no climax to the movie. Unless you're talking about her walking into a tunnel yelling trade. There needs to be some sort of payoff.
I guess it's that thing, you know, whatever that was that dropped that we don't know what it was.
Yeah. That's about as exciting a climax as we got in Creature.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
So there's like no payoff for watching this movie for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people were disappointed they didn't get to see like the, you know, they talked about the kids getting into the caves underneath the city or whatever.
And just
like
offhand
a little underworld thing, and they thought that they were going to see that, so people are disappointed about that, too, I've seen.
I'm not disappointed about that.
I'm not disappointed about that either.
I'm not even disappointed about not seeing the creature. I'm okay with that.
I wanted to understand the trade concept a little better by the end.
Yes, personally. We need to understand what happened in the movie. It's okay if it has a sad ending and everyone dies. That's fine.
To me, even though I agree with you, I think it was clearly some sort of monster, I would have been more okay with it ending ambiguously if they had left it with the police talking about it. Just because then it makes sense for it not to make sense because it's the real world and stuff doesn't always make sense and, you know, whatever. That probably doesn't make sense to you, but I would have preferred them to not shown that last scene. Just had it end with the cops talking about it.
Yeah, that would have been better. It still wouldn't have made it really good because there was no ending.
I agree.
And again, let me reiterate, I think that Mike Flanagan can make a good film. There's a lot of aspects of good film mm-hmm. in this movie.
Right.
The storyline is okay, needs a little bit of work. The actual filmmaking, there are some creepy moments, and I kind of like his filmmaking style. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he knew how to end it. It needs an ending.
I get what you're saying.
Okay, so that's Absentia. Did we miss anything that you wanted to cover?
No,
other than did this movie make you more hot for a pregnant woman?
No, not really.
Okay, I mean, just wondering. So on a scale of 1...
How about you?
Actually, I'm assuming, I don't know for a fact, but I'm assuming, Hammer, this is one area where actually you're better than me, because I've never had sex with a pregnant woman before. You've knocked a girl up twice.
Okay.
So kudos. on a scale of 1 to 10, do I need to explain to you how the scale works? It's been so long since you've done it.
Yeah. 7.5 is average, right? You know, I did enjoy it. I thought it was creepy at times. I didn't think it was, like, the scariest thing ever or anything. I'll give it, like, a 5.
This is disappointing to me because, like, the last... Ever since you've left the show on a regular basis, I think I've been within 0.5 of every one of the reviewers. So I'm going to be, like, I'm not at 4.5. So I'm 0.5 away from you.
So you wanted to be farther apart? Is that what you're saying?
I just think it's better if one of us hates it and one of us loves it. This is why we needed to do Hocus Pocus.
That's what's funny on, the movie Streamcast. It's like, me and Jay agreed on, like, almost every movie except for the original 1932 Scarface. He gave it a 5.5 after talking like it was good. Or, like, talking like it was really good, not just okay. But he's like, well, you know, I think it would be boring for modern audiences, whatever. But anyway, that's the only one we disagreed on the whole time. We were, like, always within, like, one of each other. And every movie I talk to him that we're not podcasting about, we're totally opposite on. Like, he loved World War Z, and I thought it was a pile of crap.
That's funny.
And Absentia, he gave an 8.5 to. I don't see it.
But I don't see 8.5 for sure. I mean, 8.5, you're talking, like, really good horror movie.
Yeah.
You're talking, like, Poltergeist, that kind of stuff.
All right. But, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Ratings. Wait,
there we are. I'm within 0.5 of you. Like, I'm within 0.5 of everybody, apparently.
Probably until we talked about it, I was probably going to go a little higher. But now that we talked about it, I was like, yeah, that doesn't make sense. I was probably going to go about 5.5.
Well, I originally started out like a 3. And I got a high as like a 6 at one point.
Yeah.
And then this, it kept crashing down at the end. So there you go. That's Absentia. If you have it, if you want to watch it, I mean, we've totally ruined the entire movie for you if you've listened this far. But if you still want to watch it and see what we're talking about, then you can see it on Netflix. It's streaming for in the instant queue. I was going to say for free, but you got to pay $8 a month, so I guess it's not really for free. If you want to leave comments, you think that this is a better movie than we're talking about, or maybe you're like, you guys are idiots. This is obviously a high-concept film, and you just don't fucking get it. There are many, many ways that you can yell at us. One of them being you can email us at reszombie7@gmail.com. You can tweet us if you don't feel like being long-winded about it at reszombie7 on Twitter. You can always go to the Facebook page, the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast on Facebook. You can leave comments on our website at zombie7.com. You can comment there. So this has been Absentia.
Yeah, a lot of people like it. It's got, I think it's got a 6.5 on IMDb, so maybe we're just losers. I don't know.
Explain it to us. Why does it have a 6.5?
Yeah, I mean, but then when you read some of the comments, it's like everybody hates it and says it's boring, so I don't know.
Hey, so there you go, listeners. It's been nice to have Hammerback in the fold for a bonus episode and now actually one-night stand episode. Next week, we will get started on our new franchise, which I'm happy to tell you will be kind of weird as far as the franchises we've done. It'll be the Slumber Party Massacre franchise because there's like 6 movies, but they go in a bunch of different names. So it's kind of a go here. Go with me here on this. So this has been the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. I am Ron Martin for Hammer, for Morty, for Pregnant Women Everywhere, for Creepy Insect People Who Live in Walls. We will see you guys next week.
And Frumpy Girls.
No, not, she's not frumpy. The clothes make her look frumpy. We'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
Or have we lost our minds? It's surreal. It's just not believable. A grand absurdity.
Oh, he has animal bones in his stomach.
Right.
What happened there? Did you just shit all over me? What happened?
I just moved my leg.
Oh.
What the hell?
Well, I mean, yeah, somebody lifts their leg like that.
I didn't lift it. I moved it from over there to over here.
You made me lose place where I was at now.
Animal bones in his belly.